You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to the Pick Six Podcast, CBS Sports Daily NFL Podcast. I'm Will Brinson. I'm your host. It is Wednesday, March 23rd. And this was going to be a AFC grades podcast for free agency. Those grades have been crumpled up and thrown in the trash because Tyreek Hill has been traded from the Chiefs to the Dolphins, continuing the March Madness run of the NFL insanity of the 2022 NFL offseason. Joining me to break it down, didn't even know you were going to do an emergency podcast today, Tyler Sullivan and Jordan DeJohnny. What's up, boys?
What's happening?
What's going on?
I definitely had to like tweak my brain not to call you Ryan Wilson and John Breach there.
I know. It's not the super friends. It's the super acquaintances, I think.
You guys are super friends. You guys count. I'm just saying, like, I'm just used to like the emergency podcast. Everything feels surreal at this point. Tyreek Hill traded. Let's get to the nuts and bolts of the deal. Tyreek Hill traded from the Chiefs to the Dolphins in exchange. And I got to tell you, and we can get to it, but I kind of thought this was a little bit light in return. The Chiefs send a 2022 first round pick, which was the 49ers pick because it's 29th overall, a 2022 second round pick, a 2022 fourth round pick, a 2023 fourth round pick, and a 2023 sixth round pick. The Dolphins are then going to sign Tyreek Hill to what will be called the biggest wide receiver contract. And it was being originally framed as a 4-year, $120 million extension. We'll talk about the contract too, but we'll get to the contract in a minute. I think there's a lot of agent talk that being fed into that contract. Apparently about $53 million fully guaranteed at signing, and then another $73 million, I think, fully guaranteed at the start of the 2023 league year. So relative to Davante Adams, it depends how you want to frame it. I don't think he's going to make more on an average annual basis technically, but he will be getting more fully guaranteed money upon signing, which is, you know, ultimately what matters. Anyway, first reaction, Sully, when we heard the news, how do you think this panned out for, you know, either side, I guess? I mean, do you think this is a smart move by the Dolphins? Are you shocked to find out the Chiefs were pulling this, especially in the light of the Adams news, or is this just another day at the office?
Well, you got to kind of even go back even further, right? I mean, we heard that all of a sudden Tyreek Hill got granted permission by the Kansas City Chiefs to seek a trade, and it was down to the Miami Dolphins and the New York Jets, and it was basically just kind of waiting and seeing what was going to happen. It was almost like Deshaun Watson 2.0. The teams had submitted their trade offers. You're just waiting to see where Tyreek Hill was going to go. And then ultimately ends up picking the Dolphins. I think that's probably the smartest choice for a number of reasons. No state income tax, all that, you know, financial stuff. But also, you're going to a team that has a new head coach, Mike McDaniel, that is utilizing speed more than anything. I mean, that is something that I think is the biggest thing that you look at with the Miami Dolphins. The number one thing that I was shocked about was that Jalen Waddle wasn't in the deal. If you're Kansas City, I was thinking, you know, all right, you know, you can give up, you know, you get some draft picks. But if I'm losing a receiver like Tyreek Hill, I want Jalen Waddle. I want a guy like that back into my offense that I can kind of make another kind of Tyreek Hill into. And ultimately, the fact that you got to keep him, the Dolphins are going to have one of the fastest offenses in the NFL.
Yeah, you know, Jordan. Go ahead.
I was going to say, I mean, what really shocked me about everything that just transpired is how quickly it all came to fruition, right? I mean, the narrative around this always sounded like the Chiefs were going to agree to terms with Tyreek Hill on a big-time extension that was going to keep him in Kansas City as him and Patrick Mahomes try to run it back and try to set up a Chiefs dynasty. Well, no. And I thought it was interesting how it was framed, all the reporters over the past hour saying that a deal was going to happen sooner rather than later. It was like that. It was very, very quick. In terms of the compensation, you know, Brinson, you brought it up that maybe it was a little light. I'm kind of in the middle there, honestly, especially with the deal they had to hand out. Now, the Dolphins, of course, had the cap space to make this come to fruition. Finally, the other thing that kind of surprised me is the two potential landing spots in the New York Jets and the Miami Dolphins. I found that interesting. But also, if I was Tyreek Hill, I feel like I wouldn't have been that divided. I feel like I would have wanted to go to Miami. I'm kind of enticed and intrigued by the new lead man they have there. And I feel like I'm able to roll back the film and see what he did in San Fran and be excited about how I'm going to be utilized. Now, I can show the NFL that the Chiefs didn't make me. I was a large part in creating what they had on offense.
Now, that, I mean, that is, you're speaking from Tyreek Hill's perspective, because correct. He may find out the other thing when Tua's spiking balls at his feet and he doesn't have Patrick Mahomes and Andy Reid drawing up plays for him. But I do agree with that latter point that, and I do kind of wonder, like, were the Jets willing to give up the 10th overall pick? Maybe not. I hope we find out, because if they were, and the Chiefs did Tyreek a solid by sending him to Miami, which I believe is where he lives, and you know, New York, Miami, both fun cities, but Miami, no state income tax. And, you know, New York, Zach Wilson. So I would have preferred Miami as well.
You would have to think that those deals are comparable, though, because wasn't the reporting that the Chiefs have kind of gotten both of these deals and it was just up to Tyreek Hill up to where he wanted to go? If it was so one-sided, the Chiefs would probably put their foot down and say, okay, well, we're not going to send you there. We're getting nothing in return.
I mean, you would think that the Chiefs would be like, look, man, I know you want to go to Miami, but We're taking the 10th overall pick. You know, like, you don't have a no trade clause. We can do whatever we want. And I mean, I don't know. That would be really surprising. So I want to know what the Jets were offering. You have to think it was a future first, but even then, it's like, I know some Jets fans were like, oh, give up two first. I don't care. Like, you know, and there were some people who thought maybe Elijah Moore or Jalen Waddle would be included in the deal coming back. That would have been great for the Chiefs, but clearly not the case. I would say that if we're looking at winners and losers in this deal, it's pretty easy. Tua is a massive winner here. You know, Tyreek Hill, I don't like the idea of giving up a bunch of picks to trade for a veteran receiver, especially one who's been, I'm not dependent on Patrick Mahomes, but who has been playing with Patrick Mahomes and Andy Reid, because more than likely that guy is benefiting from having those two guys around him. I do love the fact that Mike McDaniel is going to run a San Fran style offense that gets guys into space, we assume. And if you like picture Deebo Samuel without the carries out of the backfield and then put Tyreek Hill in there, and that's absolutely terrifying, especially when Jalen Waddle is there too, Sully.
I was just going to say that. It's not only that you have to worry about Tyreek Hill in that setting, it's Jalen Waddle too. We were having those same conversations when Mike McDaniel was hired. It was, okay, you could see Jalen Waddle fitting into this Deebo Samuel type of role, and that's scary enough for opposing defenses to begin with, but now that you have two guys they have to worry about in that regard, I mean, in theory, if you want to get weird about it, you can have some like pony-style offense with Tyreek Hill and Jalen Waddle in the backfield, and you don't know what's going to happen. You move guys in motion. I'm excited to see how that rolls out with Mike McDaniel. Also, the number one thing I know, we all like to wager every now and again. I'm fascinated to see what happens with Coach of the Year odds now with Mike McDaniel to see how that comes out and see what we're looking at with that.
Well, the other thing that I want to see too is, and I'll check right now and see if it's up. Deebo,
I don't know if those are out yet.
The AFC West or the AFC or the.
Sorry, not that. I was saying Coach of the Year.
Oh no, I want to see if they had the division odds up. I'm guessing they don't have AFC West back up. The Chiefs were plus money. There we go. Plus 175 now to bet on Patrick Mahomes. The Chargers actually leapfrogged the Broncos recently, which is a little odd. The Broncos were the second favorite. I mean, frankly, I kind of like the Raiders at plus 650, and I'll definitely be interested in the Chiefs at plus 175. Jordan, give me another winner from this deal.
I mean, yeah, I wanted to continue what you were talking about with Tua. I think it's worth bringing up that Tua has been winning all offseason, right? Look at what they did on the offensive line, adding two big pieces, and they may not be done just yet in terms of what they do in the draft. I mean, the Miami Dolphins had the worst offensive line in football last year, and that's a big reason I feel like Tua wasn't able to progress and get better as we thought he might have. I mean, go back and look at week two when he took that shot to the rib cage. That obviously took a good chunk out of this season. So I think surrounding him with weapons, protection on the offensive line is obviously very, very big. But how about losers? I think that one big loser is obviously the Kansas City Chiefs, because the AFC West has turned into what is straight up an arms race this offseason. And it's interesting that the Chiefs are kind of on the losing end of this. I mean, when you look at the weapons for Kansas City entering 2022, obviously I'm favoring Tyreek Hill over Travis Kelce. And now that you're losing that, where do they go from now? I know we're seeing reports saying that, you know, Marquez Valdes-Scantling as a deep threat, but obviously that's not going to replace the production you got out of Tyreek Hill. What's Kansas City going to do next? What are they going to do to try to keep up with what's becoming the best division in the NFL?
Yeah, by the way, you know who else is a loser? Pete Prisco, who filed his mock draft an hour ago.
Oh, no.
I mean, at least it's only 29 that you got to swap out, and you can probably give the Chiefs a wide receiver. You would have to think they're going to consider taking a wide receiver there. The Marquez Valdes-Scantling thing, I mean, I'm not like ragging on Tom Pelissero here because he's the one who tweeted it out, but it's like, he's like, Marquez Valdes-Scantling on his way to Kansas City as a potential Tyreek Hill replacement. It's like, no. That's not going to work. Although I do like MVS, and I mean, I think it's fair to ask some questions about this Chiefs offense, at least in terms of the weapons they have. You're now operating with Josh Gordon, Mecole Hardman, Juju Smith-Schuster, and Travis Kelce as your primary receivers. That's not like a bad group of weapons, but I mean, is Mecole Hardman going to take a leap and be Tyreek Hill, or is this offense going to sputter a little bit because they don't have that explosive wide receiver?
The Chiefs have been waiting on that number two wide receiver for years now, and that's why they allowed DeMarcus Robinson and Byron Pringle to walk in free agency. So no, I don't think Hardman's going to evolve into that number two. And I also want to say this really does water down the Juju Smith-Schuster signing, in my opinion, as well, because I looked at him as a great number two. Look how, you know, productive he was working alongside or opposite of Antonio Brown. I thought we were going to get that with Tyreek Hill, and that was going to be something that added something big to this offense. Now, all of a sudden, if he's thrust into, again, that number one spot, I'm a bit curious to see how that looks.
But if you're Juju, I think that you're somewhat happy about this development today because you are now the de facto number one wide receiver. You're going to get all the looks from arguably the best quarterback in the NFL in Patrick Mahomes, and you're only on a one-year deal. So you're going to put up stats. You're going to put up numbers. So if he was banking on cashing in next offseason after a year stint with Kansas City, I know you're not going to have Tyreek Hill on the opposite side, but you're also now going to get those premier looks from Patrick Mahomes. So there is some sort of benefit there for him from a statistical standpoint. Maybe it doesn't produce wins or anything like that, but still for him, hitting the market next offseason, that's good for Juju.
Yeah, Juju is definitely a winner here. And look, let's not forget that 3 years ago, you know, Juju, or maybe I guess it was four years ago, Juju had a 1,400 yard, 111 catch, 1,400 yard season at age 22.
And we're also talking about, yes, he doesn't have a number one wide receiver, but let's not forget Travis Kelce still in this offense where you still have to account for that type of a body in the passing game.
Well, I mean, let me just throw this out. Like, Juju is still only 25 years old. He won't turn 26 until the middle of the season. It's entirely possible that Andy Reid views him as a potential number one in this offense. Now, maybe he couldn't be the number one without Antonio Brown in Pittsburgh's offense, but in an Andy Reid offense, a good route runner who gets open underneath, like, you don't have to be just winning in man coverage on the outside 24/7. You can, like, Andy Reid will scheme stuff up and get you open for potential big plays.
And you also go from the corpse of Big Ben to Patrick Mahomes.
Yeah, exactly. And if you learn how to play, you know, you learn how to do some playground ball on the fly and get on the same page as Patrick Mahomes. And then you bring in, I don't know, you draft somebody at 29 potentially. The thought process was, if Jameson, at least I know some people who are plugged into the draft stuff, we're looking at is like maybe Jameson Williams they could go with at 10, like a guy who's coming off an ACL tear but is just a blisterer, just a burner. He might still be there at 29. That's possible, just given the depth of this wide receiver class too.
It's possible, but I would, you know, from speaking up here in New England, that 21 has been a very popular spot for Jameson Williams to land, because obviously there's that history with Mac Jones. They have not addressed the number one wide receiver position. And, you know, that's a very, you know, it's been a very popular landing spot at 21 for New England. So that's, you know, that's one thing that they might have paused there. But like we've been talking about, and you guys have been talking about for a while, it's a deep draft all the way around. So you might be able to find some talent later on too.
Yeah, like Prisco actually had Williams going to the Packers at 28, and then N'Kobe Dean to the Dolphins at 29. All right. By the way, if you're in the if you're in the chat, first of all, you definitely don't think Juju Smith-Schuster's a one, judging by the flood of no's that just came through the chat. Second of all, if you're watching on YouTube live, And in the chat, smash the like button. Bang that thing up. We can't give away a hat on an emergency podcast, but you never know. Debo, sometimes Debo feels like giving stuff away. Anyway, we're going to take a quick break while you guys all smash the like button. And when we come back, we'll break down this trade even further.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Okay, so, I mean, I don't think you can call the Dolphins losers. Like, I tend to think the Dolphins won the trade, but I don't like the idea of giving a massive contract to, to a guy who is, like, you're paying. All right, so. Just real quickly, I want to look at these contracts because we don't have the full details yet. But if you go and you look at what's gone on in these last two deals, you have the Green Bay Packers trading away Devontae Adams and the Chiefs trading away Tyreek Hill. And both guys, you have an argument to be the best wide receiver in football. The problem is what's happened with this wide receiver market. You know, Mike Williams got paid this offseason and got $20 million. Amari Cooper, $20 million salary traded. DeAndre Hopkins was making $27.25 million per year coming into the season, but it's an outlier contract because of the way that they restructured it. However, and the next closest guy was Julio Jones, but he just got cut by the Titans. So the next, after Tyreek Hill got paid, the fourth highest paid wide receiver is Keenan Allen, and the fifth is Mike Williams by average annual salary. The problem is this Hopkins deal, it was an outlier relative to the market, but Adams and Hill weren't willing to take less than what Hopkins was making because, you know, they say we're better than Hopkins. And so the two teams who got them had to overpay on an average annual basis and on a fully guaranteed basis in order to acquire their services. I sort of wonder how this was going to affect the market moving forward. Like, you know, I can't see these wide receivers going above $30 million on a regular basis. Like, it's weird how this has tweaked it because it's two elite guys who got traded and paid immediately. That was just sort of an open-ended question.
I think that's what you're going to be seeing. But it's not, but I mean, it's the same, you're going to have the same conversation with quarterbacks now when we're starting to look at these fully guaranteed deals that all these quarterbacks are getting. It's like the happiest guy in the world is Lamar Jackson right now because he's sitting waiting about all of and seeing Kirk Cousins and Deshaun Watson and all these guys getting fully guaranteed deals. The same thing's happening at wide receiver. You're looking around the league, seeing what everybody's getting, and you're adjusting the market accordingly. I mean, that's what any good agent and representatives would do in these situations. If you're, you know, I don't know who the next one would be up in this situation, but if you're like Jaylen Waddle in a few years and you're matching production with Tyreek Hill and you're on the same team, same quarterback, hell yeah, you're going to ask for the same amount of money.
Yeah, and I want to say too, like, the market's just been weird in general. There's been contracts that surprised me both ways. I mean, Devontae Adams obviously wanted to be the highest paid receiver in the NFL. Tyreek Hill wanted to do the same. But there's other contracts that surprised me. I didn't see Mike Williams getting the money that he did. And you brought his name up next to Keenan Allen, his teammate, of course. They're in the top four when it comes to AAV. I was surprised at looking at Chris Godwin's contract. I thought he was going to get more. But that was a win-win situation since he's allowed to hit free agency quick. The other one was Allen Robinson, too. I thought that was a candidate that could potentially reset the market, get into that top three of AAV. But I think he's outside the top 10 because he's signing, obviously, with a legitimate Super Bowl contender. So the market's been all kind of topsy-turvy, in my opinion, with some of these guys.
Yeah, it's going to be Like, I mean, we're talking about elite, elite guys who got traded. I mean, you know, guys who simply didn't get dealt 5 years ago, you know? I mean, it just didn't happen. And part of that, too, is that teams are, you know, like, less need F than picks, right? Teams are more willing to send away first-round picks to get elite-level players. Additionally, teams are, you know, more willing to take on these big salaries. The salary cap has expanded. Like, I mean, I joked about it on Twitter, but, you know, 5 years ago, I remember riding down to Florida with my family to go see my grandparents, like right at the trade deadline or around Thanksgiving or something. I can't remember what it was for, but it's like Coney Ealy got dealt to the Patriots for a second round pick. It was like blockbuster trade. And now, you know, now it's like Adams and Tyreek Hill. I mean, Brandon Cooks used to be a blockbuster. And so I think this trading of, actually I missed that DJ Moore on there as well. I forgot he got paid. Yeah. Get your stuff together over the cap. Anyway, so I mean, like, all right, so I guess let's rip through some more winners and losers. Anything that stands out to either of you guys? I mean, we hear the content, hashtag content. Sully, you got a winner or a loser that stands out to you?
I'll go one clear loser for me. And again, we're going to learn more about how this all went down. And Dejani, you said the same thing. Like, this happened so quickly that it almost felt like ready-made. Like, all right, you know, the Jets and the Dolphins, bang, right here. I want to know about the other teams that were in this conversation and into how this developed.
Well, good news for you, because Adam Schefter just reported.
All right, let's hear it.
That the Jets offer did not include a first-round pick, which is, okay. Yeah, it include, but quote, rather multiple picks that were commiserate to the Dolphins offer based on the draft value chart that teams use. Mm. Interesting. And that is telling. That means that this was, you know, this is more about what the Chiefs would have sent into New York if the Jets had offered the 10th overall pick, I think.
Right. Yeah, I think that's definitely true. Or Elijah Moore. Or, like, again, the fact that none of those young wide receivers went back to Kansas City to me is surprising.
That's but a what win I was, for the Dolphins, oh, yeah. And, and the Jets. You know, if
they big were, win for them. You can kind of pair those guys together. You have one of the fastest offenses in the NFL, like I said earlier. But going back to a loser for me, where were the Green Bay Packers in all of this? You know, you have Aaron Rodgers on this big money deal. You could have pitched the Kansas City Chiefs, hey, listen, at least you're getting them out of the AFC. You're sending them to the NFC. I know that maybe you're creating another Super Bowl contender, but they're already going to be in that conversation anyways with how the NFC is looking. And for the Green Bay Packers, all the reports were that they were going to give Davante Adams the money. They were willing to give him the contract that he got in Las Vegas. He just did no longer want to play for the Green Bay Packers. The relationships have soured. He wanted a clean break. He liked Vegas. He liked Derek Carr, the Fresno State boys. They want to get back together. That's all well and good, but they were still willing to give the money. So if you're willing to shell out that kind of cash, why not go out and get yourself another legit number one wide receiver in Tyreek Hill if he's available? I don't know why you're not doubling down like these other teams are, especially when you have such an advantage at the quarterback position in Aaron Rodgers.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. And the other thing, you know, you brought up the fact that this happened so quickly. We're talking about the Green Bay Packers, another contender that could use a legitimate wide receiver. That just adds to the weirdness of this whole situation, because we were talking in the Slack room, obviously writing up landing spots and things like that. And I was like, let's hold on. It really does sound like it's just between two teams. And apparently this has been happening over the past couple of days in terms of trade negotiations and talks. One loser that I did want to bring up, and I think it's pretty obvious, but the New York Jets. And, you know, I think there's a lot of fans out there that are going to be upset that that first round pick was not offered for Tyreek Hill, because I'm sure a lot of people thought that Tyreek Hill could be someone that not only takes this franchise to the next level, but also the play of quarterback Zach Wilson as well. The Jets have been rebuilding for decades, it seems like, and you know, swinging for the fences and being able to pick up a legitimate number one wideout, someone who's been one of the best players at his position over the past few years, is probably something that the fans really wanted to do. And the fact that they weren't able to do so, and according to this, you know, new Schefter report, the offer obviously did not even hold any kind of ground compared to what Miami was offering. You know, that says something. So New York struck out in trying to get one of those legitimate weapons that was going to help take this franchise to the next level.
Yeah. I agree with you that the Jets are a loser in the sense that, you know, they really believed, you know, as it was reported in like No Bleep Sherlock, that Tyreek Hill would have helped to open things up for Zach Wilson by being that deep threat, by, you know, every time Tyreek Hill goes deep, the defense is going to be opened up underneath. I mean, it's going to just make life easier. Wilson's got a cannon arm, great down the field. you know, can absolutely bomb it. And that would have been a great, that would have been a really nice fit. But I do agree that, or I do think that the Jets not giving up one, either number four or number 10 for Tyreek Hill is a smart move. I think that that is, that would have been too much, or Elijah Moore. Like, don't, you can't give up an ascending young player on a good contract for a 28-year-old who you got to pay $30 million.
Yeah, we do these things, you know, we have these stories like how to fix the Jets, how to fix these teams that we all get budgeted in the offseason and when the seasons come to an end. And I had the Jets, and the number one of the things that we put in there is find a number one wide receiver. But one of those other subjects that I put in there is don't do anything too crazy. Kind of stay the course. Don't go and make these splash signings if it alters your timeline. Like, I don't know if the New York Jets are a Tyreek Hill away in the next 3 to 4 years of seriously contending for a Super Bowl. So don't mortgage your future for a guy like this. If you can get him and you can move, you know, without getting rid of these, you know, highly, you know, sought after picks in the first round, then sure, see what happens. See if it'll open up your offense and continue to develop Zach Wilson. But again, let's not go too crazy. You've really solidified the offensive line. You've added some tight ends. You've added to that secondary. I think that they're making wise moves. They were, you know, going to get high marks from me when this was supposed to be a AFC grades podcast. But ultimately, I still think I like the path that they're going down. Don't get too far out in front of your skis and try to make this splash for Tyreek Hill just because you're kind of suddenly in the race here. Don't get caught up in the bidding there, because I don't feel like you're a Tyreek Hill away from seriously contending in the AFC East or even in the AFC.
I mean, frankly, I think you could make the argument that are the Dolphins definitely a Tyreek Hill away from contending? They are certainly closer than the Jets.
They're in a different spot, though, because I think that this move is, like, for so long, Tua Tagovailoa has been in this. Well, the ownership wants to see what they have, and the front office wants to see what they have, and the head coaching staff is kind of has an eye for Deshaun Watson. We don't really know what's going to go on. He's in every trade rumor imaginable, and it was a very disjointed development in his first few years. Now, at the very least, it's, okay, united front, ownership, new hire. It's all about Tua Tagovailoa. Now let's pool all of our assets to see exactly what we have in this kid. So I think that they're in different stages, the Dolphins and the Jets. It's, all right, we have this first round pick. We need to see what he is. So let's surround him with the best talent imaginable, and then we'll make our assessment in the next few years here.
Yeah, is that not the best way to find out if your quarterback is your franchise quarterback? And I think we've seen teams do that before. So I think that's a good point. The Dolphins are obviously closer to contending than the New York Jets. But, you know, I think the biggest goal of 2022, year one with Mike McDaniel, is trying to figure out if that quarterback you have under center is going to be your guy. And I think they're doing a really good job of setting themselves up for that with the additions they've made. I mean, not only the offensive line and wide receiver, like we talked about, I like what they did with the running backs. I'm kind of intrigued by Chase Edmonds. And Raheem Mostert's a guy who's obviously very familiar with McDaniel. So, Zed Wilson, I almost forgot about him too. I mean, this, we're talking about big-time additions for this Miami team. I feel like we can make some good conclusion in terms of if Tua Tagovailoa is going to be the guy after this season.
Well, I mean, if this offense can't cook, it's either a Mike McDaniel problem or a Tua problem. Like, that's pretty simple. And I mean, you can give it 2 years, but hey, look, the Dolphins won 10 games 2 years ago and then 9 games last year, even though, you know, we all thought that they were sort of fraudulent in terms of like who they were beating and all that. I mean, look, again, I agree with you completely. If Tua is the guy, if Tua is going to be an NFL quarterback, he will show it. If he's going to be a franchise quarterback, he will show it in the next year, 18 months. And maybe it has to be the next year before they start looking at different options in the draft or in free agency or however it is. I think that the other thing too, you know, we talk about how Tyreek would unlock the Jets offense by accentuating what Zach Wilson does best and going deep. I actually think there's a better argument to be made that Tua, coupled with Jalen Waddle and Mike Gesicki, would be better at accentuating what Tua does, which is the underneath, in space, crossing routes. You know, think about all the stuff that Deebo Samuel did for San Francisco, and without the carries, obviously, but just getting open in space and getting Tyreek the ball and watching what he can do to a defense when he's open like that, because, you know, Mike McDaniel knows how to do that. We've seen him do it in San Francisco. If Jalen Waddle and Tua, or Jalen Waddle and Tyreek are running in space frequently in short yardage, intermediate yardage areas, like Tua is a smart decision maker and can get the a smart, quick decision maker and should be able to get the ball to them in those spots. And I mean, that's just how you get, become extremely explosive.
Yeah, for me, it's fascinating to see what's going to happen with Tua. And again, it's totally different with the Jets. They're two different organizations with two different quarterbacks on different trajectories. So for me, it makes a lot more sense for the Dolphins to go sort of all in, I should say, with all this. But for me, if you're continuing to kind of find winners and losers here, and obviously I got to go here because I'm up here in New England, what is going on with the New England Patriots? How are you not in this conversation? The number one thing was trying to find a number one target for Mac Jones. Very similar argument. You want to see if this guy's a franchise guy. You made the playoffs last year. You see the rest of the conference kind of loading up. That was the only thing that was missing from your offense. I don't know why you're not in that conversation. I would have given up number 21 and a bunch of other assets for him, for a guy like Tyreek Hill, for sure.
Is it possible that the Chiefs were not willing to trade him to the Patriots?
I'm sure it is, but I mean, I don't know. This isn't the New England Patriots with Tom Brady anymore, unless you're just scared of the logo. But what's the difference at this point between the Dolphins and the Patriots? I would even argue that the Dolphins just passed the New England Patriots with this move.
They are the same in terms of odds to win the AFC and the AFC East, 20-1 at Caesars to win, as you can see on the screen, to win the AFC. The Dolphins actually leapfrogged the Raiders, but as Debo notes, are still just 11th in the AFC. That's the other thing, too, is like if you're out here giving out first-round picks, you know, you didn't give away a future first, so that's fine, but you did give away a future second. I mean, there's no guarantee the Dolphins win 9 games. I mean, I think they should, given the division they're in. But, I mean, you know, maybe 2 free games against the Jets, but maybe not even that. And this conference is so freaking loaded. Like, I know Tyreek Hill didn't come from the NFC, but, I mean, Devontae and Russ, you know, all Khalil Mack. I mean, the AFC West in particular, I mean, I think you could argue that the Raiders, Chargers, and Broncos are winners here, too, because they don't have to face Tyreek Hill twice a year now.
I think that's a good point. I wanted to ask you a question real quick. Sure. It's kind of open-ended, but Tyreek Hill, did he make the right decision? Would it have been better for him to stay in Kansas City, you know, the situation that he's always known with one of the best quarterbacks in the NFL, or go into the unknown with Miami? Obviously, he got the money more that he wanted with Miami. I don't know what the Chiefs were offering him and what it was that he didn't like about it. But did you guys think that he made the right decision in asking for this change of scenery?
It's a great question, Sully.
Yeah, I think that, I mean, again, you're clearly decreasing in quarterback play. I think that's the number one thing I look at when you're talking about wide receiver movement. Is it the right choice or the wrong choice? Well, tell me who the quarterback is that you're going to. And if you're going from Patrick Mahomes to Tua Tagovailoa, probably not a smart move, you know, ultimately. I don't think that that's going to be the same amount of play. So, no, I don't know if it's the right move. It's all about motivation, though. Like, if he doesn't – if Tyreek Hill wants to just put up numbers, get paid, and live in hot weather, then, yes, he made the right move. You know, he's down in Miami. He's making a boatload of money. He's doing great. He wants to contend for championships and really, you know, put himself in position to have one of the most prolific careers in the league, or be maybe even the receiver of his generation. Well, then you stay in Kansas City and you stay with the Kansas City Chiefs and Patrick Mahomes. Again, he's not going anywhere. He signed a bajillion-dollar deal for 2 decades. He's not going anywhere. So it just depends on the motivation there. But for me, looking at the quarterbacks, no, it was a clear downgrade for him.
Yeah, I mean, it's basically a choice of do you want to try to win a ring, or do you want to get a lot more money? Because I really believe, despite what the Chiefs will leak out and despite what the Packers leaked out, that they were not interested in resetting the market for these top tier wide receivers. Because again, and I've said this over and over again, DeAndre Hopkins' contract was an outlier. It was not the market, but it was the, you know, I can totally see at the same time the argument from Devontae Adams and Tyreek Hill. They're like, look, I don't care what Mike Williams is making. I'm not taking, like, I'm not signing a contract that is less than DeAndre Hopkins. And when you're at that level of skill and in the NFL, you know, and at these, you know, highly, you know, like these highly focused on positions, you're not willing to take less than what the top guy's making. It's humiliating. People are like, really? Tyreek Hill's taking less than DeAndre Hopkins? Even if you have to spin it as like the guaranteed thing. So I can see why he would say, you know what? I'm going to Miami, no income tax. I'm getting $53 million in my bank account tomorrow. Like, okay. I mean, you know, sorry, Pat. See ya. Like, you know, if the Chiefs don't want to pay me, I'm out.
I think for me, again, if you know, one of the more underrated winners of this whole thing, like we're talking about, you're talking about resetting markets and all of these receivers paying attention. If you're Ja'Marr Chase right now, I know you just finished your rookie year, but how, you know, huge of a piece you were to that Chiefs offense and to reaching a Super Bowl and how close you are and how prolific you've been with Joe Burrow over these next few years. Talk about a carrot dangling in front of you when you are starting to reach that point where you can hit open and unrestricted free agency. I mean, you're talking about another record-breaking market-setting deal, and you could get maybe one of those earlier than expected now because of how prolific you've been so early if you continue this pace. For me, I think he's looking at this and other young wide receivers going into the league being like, all right, I'm about to get paid, I guess.
Yeah, what's going to happen with Terry McLaurin and A.J. Brown? Those guys are even closer to those extensions. And, I mean, what's the right move for these franchises, right? Do you try to get it done now before something else crazy happens or what?
I think that's definitely what you see.
I think with a guy like A.J. Brown or Terry McLaurin, who else is up for, I'm trying to think who else. Like D.K. Metcalf, Justin Jefferson, you know, it'll be interesting conversations to have. Again, that's the problem. Like if the DeAndre Hopkins contract had just gotten wiped off, you could easily just be like, all right, look, we're $25 million a year, you know, for you, you know, like you move up from the 20 million to the 25 or maybe 23 million and you're the top paid wide receiver. I mean, it wasn't long ago that Michael Thomas, you know, was the highest paid wide receiver in football, and his deal is like $10 million less than what these top guys are making on a yearly basis. So I don't think that Justin Jefferson will be totally willing to settle for $25 million. But the difference is these, these younger players are, you know, still susceptible to the fifth year option and, you know, the franchise tag. So that all factors into it as well. The tag number moves up now because you're averaging the top five highest paid, but you still only have three guys above 20 million. So they'll probably be able to get these younger receivers to sign somewhere in that range between, Keenan Allen and Hopkins would be the range you're looking at probably.
I think another thing you got to look at here too, though, with wide receivers, obviously, you know, the position's not going away or anything like that, but I do think that you're going to see some of these teams faded a little bit more. Like you were talking about with Green Bay and Kansas City, they just did not want to pay the market value for these type of wide receivers. I think you're going to see things shift a little bit more where you see teams maybe spending a little bit more at tight end and at running back and all of these positions that historically haven't been as crazy money. I mean, we've seen it already this year. A ton of these teams are placing the franchise tags on tight ends because the money was dirt cheap for them. I think that you're going to start seeing teams move the money around a little bit that way, almost, you know, similar to kind of like what New England did last year. I think that they did that, signing Jonnu Smith and Hunter Henry, because it was they saw value there. They're providing, you know, upper echelon pass catching ability, but at an extremely cheap rate. And then they sign like tier two, tier three wide receivers on the other end. I think you'd see more of that around the league, especially if these elite guys are really breaking the bank and kind of sucking on your cap a little bit.
Yeah. And the other thing too, Jordan, is that when you start to look around, you know, we've had a pretty big influx of young receivers. It started a couple of years ago, but it's really accelerated over the last few years with these young receivers, like a Justin Jefferson comes in and is just absolutely dominant. I mean, it's possible these teams can say, look, you know, we appreciate, what you are as a player and everything. But at the same time, we feel like we can draft your replacement in the same vein that we found you in the draft.
Yep, I would agree with that. And, you know, not that the wide receiver position is going the way of the running back where you just want to bring in young talent or anything, but I think a lot of people are going to be paying attention to these guys at the top of the market and those record-breaking deals that they signed and kind of how they fare and those changes of scenery as well.
Yeah, agree completely. Sorry, I'm texting with Pete. I'm telling him he got caught in a lie because his mock draft went up an hour ago. He's like, he texted back. He's like, it went live yesterday. Shut up and do your little podcast. That's how you know you've got Pete. That's how you know you've got Pete cornered. He starts lashing out. By the way, smash the like button if you're listening or watching on YouTube. Might as well hit the subscribe and hit the alert button too, because we get emergency podcast when breaking news like this happens. And I mean, frankly, my wife, AK, is so sick of the, she's like, I thought free agency trade deadline was over. I'm like, you don't know. Well, one, you don't know what you're talking about. Two, no, it's not over. It never ends. Is this the craziest offseason? I mean, it's the craziest offseason I remember. But I mean, I don't want to, you know, I hate to get caught up in hyperbole, but I mean, since you guys started CBS, craziest offseason?
100%. Oh, yeah, for sure. And I think it's fair to say one of the craziest in NFL history, if not the craziest. I mean, I just wrote a piece for CBSSports.com ranking the top 10 NFL offseason transactions just by their level of craziness, surprise, whatever it may be. And you look at this list, I mean, it's Amari Cooper being traded to the Browns is number 9 on a list of so many things that's happened. And one of the other reasons I think this is one of the craziest, if not the craziest offseason in NFL history is because of the high rate of speed of the quarterback carousel, right? I mean, when's the last time we saw this much movement when it came to starting quarterbacks in the NFL, the arms race going on in the AFC West? That's truly what makes it the craziest offseason to me.
Yeah, I mean, and that's the other thing too. You know, we joked about the Coney Ealy. Like Coney Ealy was a big trade at the deadline, or like Brandon Cooks being dealt from the Saints, and or was he was a trade deadline deal to the Pats, I think, right?
No, he was in the offseason. Aqib Talib was an in-season trade for New England. That was a big one for them at the time.
Or maybe it was he was in-season
trade. Garoppolo was one that was massive.
Yeah. Yeah, but I mean, yeah, like Jimmy G, like a backup quarterback. You know, like a backup quarterback, or you know, a pass like Cornelius, like a second tier pass rusher who didn't pan out on his rookie deal, or Brandon Cooks, you know, a number two wideout. I mean, we've seen Russell Wilson, Davante Adams, and Tyreek Hill, Khalil Mack traded this offseason. Like those names those are insane names to be sent packing. And by the way, all involved in the AFC West, which is even crazier. You know, like do you think that Tyreek Hill already having won a Super Bowl maybe kind of changes the equation too?
That's absolutely
non sequitur, but it just popped in my head.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was kind of alluding to earlier. Like he's made his money, or he's won the championship. Now it's about time making the money. You know, if he had never won one before, then maybe you want to get that on your resume. But the motivation here is, yes, you're going from a lesser quarterback from Mahomes to Tua, but you're going to Miami. You're going to, you know, live in the sunshine, and you're going to get paid very, very handsomely. So I think that was the motivation there.
And yeah. Another thing that might have had something to do with it, and tell me if I'm off base here, but everything that's gone on in the AFC West this offseason, it's gone absolutely crazy. Did that have something, anything to do with Tyreek Hill wanting a change of scenery?
It's not a crazy idea, but I don't think he's going to Miami thinking I've got a better chance to win a Super Bowl than in Kansas City. And it's in, you know, I mean, the Chiefs. I would say a little off base. It's not a crazy idea. And Lord knows any theory is always plausible on the Pick Six podcast. I just think it's more about him liking Miami than wanting to get away from KC, because I think Adam Schefter tweeted that he was quote torn about the decision. So, I mean, obviously everybody likes Miami better than Kansas City. I mean, right.
I've never been to Kansas City, but yeah, I agree.
And you know, the state income tax matters. The actual picks per Mike Garofalo of NFL Media, 35 and 38 were offered from the Jets to the Chiefs in the initial deal.
As opposed to 5 or 6 picks. Yeah,
I'm guessing they wanted that first round pick. And look, man, they probably think they can find a wide receiver in the first round who will not match what Tyreek Hill does. But you know, an ascending young player on a rookie contract is inherently more valuable than a veteran wide receiver who is speed reliant, like a slow Tyreek Hill ain't, if he's not Cheetah. I'm not saying he's slowing down, but you never know how somebody's going to age. Will he be just as motivated, you know, in Miami with $53 million as he was in Kansas City? You would think so, but again, you never know. It's somebody in the chat points that he's 27. Yeah, he'll turn 28 in the season. So, I mean, just leave me alone. I'm kidding. Any other winners or losers from this deal?
I think anybody who owns Tyreek Hill in Dynasty and Fantasy is probably a loser. I think that one, you know, again, we're talking about, is it the right choice for Tyreek Hill going from Kansas City to Miami? From a production standpoint, I don't think so. Again, you're just decreasing the quarterback play there. where I don't know Mike McDaniel, if he creates this unbelievable offense where he's putting up ridiculous numbers. I still think Tyreek Hill will still be a upper echelon fantasy option, but I think gone are the days where you had that conversation where he was bottom of the first round type of pick there. I think you're talking about bottom of the second, early third type of kind of range there after you get your running backs.
Yeah, I think you're right, but I am kind of intrigued. I feel like there's going to be, a different section of people who are like, oh, him teaming up with Mike McDaniel in this offense, some short stuff might be going on, PPR value might be kind of enticing, but I think you're probably more correct on that. Speaking of some other losers, how about guys like Preston Williams and Devontae Parker?
Yeah.
Now the Dolphins have added three guys, or including last year with Jaylen Waddle, now three guys that are above you on the depth chart that clearly this new
Jordan cut out, or did my audio cut out?
No, I think Jordan, okay. Jordan might have cut
yeah.
out.
It sounded like your audio, you check your mic, Jordan, but the, I agree. That's a good call.
It's totally true.
Yeah. The second level, not off base there. The second level, Dolphins receivers. I mean, Devontae Parker, former first round pick. I mean, what kind of run, how many snaps per game is he getting now? I mean, pretty minimal when you've got a guy like and you got to figure, with the way that we're assuming that Mike McDaniel's offense is going to be similar to Kyle Shanahan's. That feels like a very reasonable stance to take. It's not going to be like four wide receivers out there all the time. They're going to be trying to run the ball a bunch. And it's possible Tyreek Hill's volume, his volume plus, whatever volume Waddle gets just absolutely snuffs out Parker in those impressive.
But not only that, Will, it's if you're talking about trying to adopt a San Francisco type of offense, you're incorporating the tight end quite a bit there. We saw Absolutely. It with George Kittle. Now you're going to get that with Gesicki there now as well. Obviously, he's playing on the franchise tag. So, there's targets. Targets could be hard to come by there, especially now with Tyreek Hill there.
Yeah, no question about it. All right, any other winners or losers? Anything else we got to cover on this on this podcast?
I'm sure there are. But we'll find them at some point.
Well, actually, let's just thinking through this. All right, if you had to slot out, okay, let's look at the bigger picture stuff for the AFC East and the AFC West. Very quickly. Sorry, I was filibustering. Jordan, did you get your bike back? Are you still muted? Weird.
Still muted.
Check see if you're muted. If you had to slot out the AFC East. If you're picking it right now, Sully, what would you go with?
I'm going clearly Buffalo. Buffalo's the clear cut number one. I'm taking Miami over New England, then New England, and then the New York Jets. I mean, I was having that feeling where it's a coin flip before this trade, and especially when you solidify the offensive line with Terron Armstead, you make all of those type of moves. The Patriots haven't done much of anything. I know they had the big splash offseason last year. Very quiet this year. You brought back a couple of key names. Trent Brown's a big one. Devin McCourty. You make some small moves. Ty Montgomery. You bring back James White. But ultimately, not enough that's going to put you over the edge there. And especially when you're talking about getting into these type of shootouts, I don't really like what they've done so far, especially when they haven't addressed the secondary and lost J.C. Jackson. So they're the number three team. And then the Jets. They're clearly last, but they're an ascending team too. I like what they've been doing. I love their offseason so far. I mean, you're talking about Jordan Whitehead, DJ Reed. I mean, they've made a bunch of moves that I really like. And if they were to get Tyreek Hill in this alternate universe, then you're like, okay, here they come. But I still like where they're going. And for me, it's their arrows pointing up, even though they're last. And New England, even though they're third above them, their arrows pointing down a little bit.
Are you going Miami or New England as the number two team in the division, Jordan?
Well, am I back? Can you hear me now?
I can hear you.
Okay, I don't know what happened. I'm shocked. Did you say that the Miami Dolphins are now your number two in the AFC East?
Ooh. Yes, they are.
I think that's interesting, especially coming from you. I mean, I'm leaning towards the Patriots at my number two. Obviously, the Bills are number one, as you said. I mean, with the Patriots, their offseason has not been up to par, right? They've left a little bit to be desired, especially losing some of their bigger pieces. But at the same time, I do think that second and third spot's going to be very close, as it was last year. I think the Patriots with 10-7, Dolphins 9-8, it really could come down to the wire between those two teams. And as intrigued I am by Mike McDaniel and this new offense that he's putting together.
I think we lost him again. It's all right. Don't worry about it. I think I agree with you. I think he was going to go with Pats too. Yeah. I think I would take the Dolphins. I think I would probably pick the Dolphins too as well right now. And I'm sure I would regret it within, you know, like 3 weeks of the season starting. Does this move the Chiefs out of the top spot for you, Sully, in the AFC West?
No, I still want to see how they try to fix the wide receiver position. I'm going to kind of wait and see how that goes. I'm still going to leave them number one. I still like the quarterback position better than anybody else in that division. But you're splitting hairs here now. You're getting a little, you know, it wasn't like a few years ago where, okay, you're just heads and shoulders above everybody else in this division. Now it is unbelievably tight from top to bottom. I mean, it's not like the AFC East where there's the Buffalo Bills and then it's just kind of conversations as you go down the list. You are splitting hairs between the Chargers and the Broncos and even the Raiders. I know that the quarterback position isn't as star-studded with Derek Carr under there as opposed to Justin Herbert and Russell Wilson, but that's still a formidable offense that they're going to have to deal with. So I still like Kansas City. I want to see how it goes. I like Juju Smith-Schuster there as a number 1B, and then Travis Kelce there obviously still solidifying that offense, and I want to see what they do at wide receiver. I'll keep them there. But if they go into the season with just this, then I think you got to have that conversation of the Chargers or the Broncos kind of jumping over them.
Yeah, I don't think it is crazy at all to suggest that any of the four teams could win that division. And that's why Vegas has the Chiefs are now plus 175. I mean, if you're going to give me Andy Reid and Patrick Mahomes at almost 2-1 to win the division, I don't care who else is in the division. I'm probably going to take it because there's a lot of variables with the other teams. But I mean, if the Chiefs don't bring in another wide receiver, you know, you can look at this offense and say, it's not quite as dynamic. And Travis Kelce's a little bit older and, you have to trust a leap of faith from Juju Smith-Schuster and Mecole Hardman. Yeah. But, I mean, again, I'm probably going to end up betting the Chiefs and picking the Chiefs. And I'll be on an island. Like, or not on an island. It'll be a small island because everybody's going to go with the trendy teams who made all the additions this offseason. All right. That's it for the Tyreek Hill traded to Miami Dolphins emergency podcast that no one saw coming. And also, by the way, like, you know, you mentioned the Watson thing, Sully. It's like that thing was like, 6 weeks or like 9 months in the making. It was like Tyreek Hill could be traded. And then it was like, okay, Tyreek Hill is getting traded right now. Like this is going down. It came out very quickly and erupted. And that's why we have you guys, here to help out to do the emergency podcast. Thanks for doing it. For Sully, for Jordan, I'm Brinson. We will see you guys later. Make sure to smash that like button. Talk to you guys later.
Jeremy Renner returns to Paramount Plus for a brand new season of the original hit series, Mayor of Kingstown.
My job is to create a balance, avoid a war.
From executive producer Taylor Sheridan, co-creator of Yellowstone.
There's some new players in town, and they brought the flag.
And Antoine Fuqua, director of Training Day.
I know it's always been a war zone, Mike, but this is next level.
The mayor is back in business.
Are you warning me?
You're going to find out.
Mayor of Kingstown, new season streaming June 2nd, exclusively on Paramount Plus.